I want to get a little Love something
talk
there
about, radio.
About with the guys. Yeah. Just a little bit too much in the middle, but we'll figure it out. I can't hear you.
I stroll through the picture. What I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories. They all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2792. That's 2792. I'm Carol Levine and I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight we're going to have one of my favorite people on. That's Sharon Higdon Jones. And she's our co-host for the night. She's a very smart lady. I like her a lot. She's a LICO psychotherapist for, Did I say the LICO?
You did.
She's a licensed. I love it. Okay. I make myself laugh all the time, Sharon. I have such a sense of humor. All right. She's a licensed psychotherapist for over 35 years with individuals, couples, and families who have experienced the trauma of abuse. In her words, the pain of being sexually abused is deep and profound. The abuse experience touches the core of a woman's being in ways that she could never have predicted. She has been violated in so many different levels, and Sharon is also the author of the book Healing Steps, A Gentle Path to Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. Now, and she also has workbooks. I love workbooks. I think they're fantastic. And so people out there who write books and they have workbooks, that's a good thing. We also have a 409 area code here. I'm going to open up this mic here. Hold on a second. Go ahead. Stop twirling. That's how I feel tonight, like I'm twirling. Hey, you. Hold on
this
a second.
This is Roberta.
Oh, Roberta, there you go. Hi. I'm having
Roberta
a
in Oklahoma.
Yes, you are, by God. Well, at least I think you are. Sometimes you're not. I don't know. But anyway, okay. So I want to read the mission statement, okay? I'm supposed to be doing that. So and then we're going to get on some heavy-duty topics here. I know that, Sharon wants to speak about, of course, the holidays, which are coming up very soon. They're starting. And then I also, too, want to let people know that December is actually the month. I'm not going to say celebrated because that sounds too weird. But it's for awareness of men's abuse, okay? Mm-hmm. And the boys, and they turn into men. If they don't get help, what happens? That's what happens. Same thing with girls. But they should be, recognized as well. And I have a whole bunch of stats from the Justice Department that we can talk about and all kinds of stuff. And, there's just so much here I have in front of me as usual. But let me read this. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We do offer hope for healing because there is hope for healing. And it's through different paths, and that's providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, you always hear me say prevention a little bit funny, and the reason why I do that is to get your attention. Hello? If we as a society knew more about prevention and parents, too, in the normal homes, okay, would sit down with their children and talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I always put it, the perverts out there. And also, too, not just the perverts out there, but also in your family if someone's bothering you. And also, too, remember, the older teenagers, okay, teenagers, by the time they're 15 years old, know that they're different. They really have, well, their prey is really, and I say P-R-E-Y for that, is really for, you know, like someone 8 years old, a little girl or a little boy, okay? And they know by the time they're 15 that they're different, but what they do so often is they, you know, they don't want their peers to know how they are. So what they do is they just simply, you know, go out with girls and act like everything's okay. Or if it's a girl, go out with guys and act like it's okay. But their mind is always focused on the younger. Okay, so keep that in mind. And let your children know if anyone makes them feel uncomfortable that they can come to you. Okay, they can come to you and say, hey, so-and-so makes me feel uncomfortable. So-and-so may have touched me. And the bathing suit area, we at NASCA are many times we don't like to sugarcoat things, but the society isn't totally ready for that. I noticed that, found that out in presentations. They start squirming in their seats. Okay. So I knew I had to tone it down. But the truth of the matter is those parts belong to us, okay, and you teach them that. We also have on our website, and that's NASCA, NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, we have all different types. If you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see red lines. And in those red bars, you might, whatever you want to call them, they're over to the left are programs, and you, each one has a topic. Click on to any one of them, and you'll learn an awful lot. It teaches you how to, you know, to speak to your children, at what age you should speak to your children, what you should say to your children, what not to say. And they also recommend that you do role playing, and so do I. I love to role play. I think it's a lot of fun. And of course, I'm the clown always. But anyway, you know, role play, because your children, if something does happen to them, you know, they need to have parents that have their heads together, all right? It teaches you how to speak to your children and tell them about the good, the bad, the ugly. And if, for God's sake, if something does happen, you know, you have to hold yourself together and that you will always believe them. So it's a good thing to role play first. And then, you know, your children and you will bond together because mommy and daddy, not only do they talk about stranger danger, they talk about other things they want for me to be safe. And quite frankly, the world we live in today, every statistic that we've ever quoted has doubled. And as long as our world is like it is right now, it's going to continue to get worse because there's a lot more trafficking out there, those that come over from the border. A lot of them are trafficked out on the streets, and we already had a problem with that, didn't we, okay? That's something that can happen in your own backyard. It doesn't have to be from another country, but a lot of times our kids who disappear are taken to another country. I mean, there's just so much. I could write 10 books on child abuse and the things that, you know, happen to children, okay, and also, too, about the perpetrators. So getting back to our guest, to Sharon Higdon Jones, she's going to, I'm going to hand it over to her. And then I do want to mention in a little while, I'll let you know, about December and what that means to men who have been abused as children. So go ahead, Sharon.
Okay, this is it's better to be a lycotherapist than to be a locotherapist, I think. Lycotherapist, don't say locotherapist.
I didn't even take a funny pill tonight either, I'm telling you. This is just how I am, okay?
Think you need it. I don't think you need a funny pill.
No,
if I
don't.
Could, I want
it
to say something
out
about
me.
It was funny. I do want to say something about the role-playing with children that you mentioned because it's so important. And there's really three ways or three areas where you need to, as a parent, you need to role play with your kids. One of them is to role play telling you, like, you know, if somebody was pulling plants out of a garden, how would you tell mommy and daddy about it? If somebody was, you know, to use some hypotheticals, but to have them practice doing that, obviously that's in the context of a good trusting relationship, obviously. But it's like telling you. And the second one is some what if games. You know, what if we were at the airport and all of a sudden you looked around and you didn't see mommy? What would you do? What happens if you were in the supermarket and, you know, looked up and you didn't see mommy or daddy? Or what happens if you saw a kitten, you know, going down the sidewalk? What would you do? So, you know, making up some kind of things. And then obviously, what would you do if, you know, Mr. Smith down the street wanted you to come and see puppies in his backyard? What would you do? What would you do if you know, John, the guy who mows our lawn, all of a sudden came and took you in the back shed and started touching you? What would you do? And so to give them instances, because it's not enough just to tell them not to go in the backyard or telling them what to do. It's really important to have them practice. And then also to have them practice what to do. If John says, I want you to go in the backyard, what would you say? And then practice it and yell and scream no and just exaggerate it. So that what you want to do is kind of normalize it so it becomes kind of almost a body memory or a verbal memory for the kids, so that when that happens, they're not going to freeze. Because I think all of us who have been abused in some way can remember that moment of freezing, right? When we just didn't know what to say or do exactly. Oh, God, yes, absolutely. I can tell you a certain Burns and Allen TV show that I saw back in, I don't know what year it was, in the 50s. I could probably tell you that I can recite probably that whole show because you freeze and focus, right? Or as a client, I remember telling me one time she could tell me how many butterflies there were on a wallpapered wall in her bedroom, because her father would come in at night and molest her, and there was this light that would come in from the hallway, and she would just freeze and count the butterflies, you know? So the idea about having your kids practice it so there'll be that memory, so that when that happens, they can yell or run or bang on a door or whatever you find is, you know, appropriate to tell them to do at that moment. Hopefully they will do that. Maybe they won't be able to, but hopefully they will, or they'll be able to tell you afterwards. So it's just about being specific about how you role play. And I agree with you. It's really fun. It's fun with kids. They're so imaginative, too, when you ask them to solve a problem.
They are. You know what? It's true. And, you know, they really get into it. Because I've worked with kids, and I have worked with, you know, adults also. And, college people and all this other stuff. Even the cops, I worked with them. Because they have to learn. It's really amazing. It's getting a little bit better, though, Sharon. Today, they do expect, to teach more about child abuse. The police officers need it because when they're called to domestic violence and there's kids there, you know, it's so hard for them to determine, you know, who's really to blame. They look for blood first. Who's got blood? Well, someone's got blood on them, and then the other one punched them or whatever, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Yeah. And but the children, you know, they look at them also. And have to make a determination, you know, do they need to go and get care? You know, do they need to go to the hospital? If not, is there, someone in the family who could take them? They try to, you know, use the family first before they take them, you know, and put them, say, in foster care or whatever. This is what they're trying to do. But that's not always the case. A lot of times the dysfunctional family is huge. It's not just one family member. It's many family members. Mm-hmm. So the kids end up in foster care shelters and then foster care. So, but these people, they all need, you know, to be taught what to look for.
Yeah.
And we in society and the families and your neighbors, the people down the street, in the neighborhoods, you know, they all need to know what to look for abuse. And then do something. See, that's a problem.
Absolutely. And also to look beyond the obvious wounds. So many times, like you said, you know, you look obviously if there's an emergency situation, you look for physical wounds, you know, who's bleeding and so on. But oftentimes what gets ignored are the emotional and the psychological wounds. You know, those kind of wounds that time doesn't heal, right? Those kind of wounds that, you know, take more than medical or emergency treatment. It's the wounds that fester and grow, and belief systems start to surround them and distort thinking, and all of that happens, and then that needs to be tended to. And, you know, certainly we can't expect our neighbors or friends to do that for our children, but we can expect them possibly to listen, be empathetic, and not to be afraid to ask questions.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the articles that we have, what's his name? David Pittman, I believe his name is. He has some really good articles on the NASCA website teaching you also, too, you know, your demeanor. You know, if a kid goes to their parent and they say, so-and-so touched me, and they touched me here and there, whatever, and the parent becomes so aggravated because they want to go and punch this individual. And that did happen with my son. Oh, yeah. Someone touched him. And I will say that his bio father did go and punch that individual. And I didn't care. All right? Now, I'm not saying that people should do that. But, you know, you call 911. You have to call for help. If you see something, and you know, you see something, you say something, right? Like we say. And it's so important to that kid because then you do become that child's hero because you are saying something. You know, it's so important. Really, truly is.
You know, that happened. So, that happened one time with my daughter. She must have been around 6 years old, and we were in Macy's at Christmas time. And, you know, back in the day when we didn't think as much as we do now about, you know, leaving our children alone, although she was around the corner, you know how they have aisles with toys, and she was looking at whatever it was she wanted for Christmas. My husband called me right to the end of the aisle. It had to be maybe 3 feet, maybe 3.5 feet from her, and to say, she just think I should go get the dollar, to, you know, whatever it was. And we said yes, and he left. I turned around, and my daughter was standing there, paralyzed with this look on her face that was just it was like frozen in time, like this. She looked pale. It was scary. I went up and I said, Robin, what happened? And she said nothing. I said, Robin, what happened? And she said, a man came up and he lifted up my dress, because she was wearing, you know, little dress, and touched me. And I yelled to my husband. He took off literally running in Macy's to go. I don't know how he thought he was going to identify this man, but man, he just took off. And I took her aside and took her out of the department. And he came back. We got the store manager, called the police. We did all that. But what was really important at that moment was the fact that he took off and said, I'm on this, you know, and took off after him because he was a hero to my daughter. And he came back and he said, I didn't get him, but we're going to get him and we're going to call the police and they're going to help us. What was interesting about that story, and I was so grateful to him because that was absolutely the right thing for him to do. You know, I took her and comforted her, and he took off. What was interesting about that was about 2 weeks later, she came home from school, and one of her little girlfriends said the exact same thing had happened to her in the mall, and she reported it, and they got the guy, and they arrested him, and it was the same one.
Well, there you go.
I wasn't going to go this way with holidays, but I'm just saying it's just interesting, right, that there are people who are out there who look for opportunity, right, and certainly in a toy department at Christmas time.
Sure.
Or around Santa Claus or, you know, around so many of the areas where children are going to be. We need to be careful. And I was very pleased that my daughter's dad took off at that moment. It's, you know, just like a bat. He was going to be this hero and go get him and we called the police.
It only takes a second, you know.
He was just going around. What he was doing is putting his hand up and touching girls, little girls on the bottom.
Well, you know, a lot of times that's what, the, you know, all they want to do. Have to be an actual, you know, pull down the panties and rape type thing. These guys are so weird. You know, they'll just to touch the bottom or something. But my little girl would do things like that. I'd take her into stores, and my daughter, she wasn't a preemie, okay, but she was very little. She was, and she still is. She's a very petite little girl. And I love my kids. Thank God they turned out all right. But anyway, she started walking at the age of 9 months, and I was always afraid I'd step on her. Oh, no. She's walking around. And she started to crawl like 2 inches, and then that's it. Enough of that. I'm up. I'm walking. And she was. So when we go out into when we go out into the stores, a lot of times all I had to do was just turn my body just a little bit, and she was one of those, you know. So you have to be really careful. And what you said is so true because, when that nut, and I will call him a nut, touched my son, nothing actually happened where his pants were pulled down or anything like that, but I'm saying he was touching him. So, you know, I didn't care that my husband punched him, but you see, that doesn't solve problems. I want to get that out of there, okay? Yes, you feel better at the time because you punched the son of a gun in the nose or wherever, okay? And but it doesn't stop him. What we have to do is stop these individuals so that they can't, you know, get them in jail. That's assault. He touched my son. He touched your daughter. You know what I'm saying? So, hold on a second. Sorry. I talk too much. But anyway, so I was on the phone until 4 or 5 o'clock this morning. Oh,
oh my God. I don't know how you do that.
Sometimes it is kind of hard, and I had to get up early today. But anyway, so the problem is that if we want to make a dent in the statistics, okay, of child abuse, we have to do things the right way. You know, we all feel like punching them or more, okay? We do. Mm-hmm. These are our children, and we love our children. But also, too, for the sake of your child and for the safety of other children, the best thing to do is to call 911.
Yes.
Then you can punch him. No, I didn't say that. But, no, you call 911.
Well, it's primitive, you know. It's primitive. And when primitive things like that happen, right, it brings up, it hooks that primitive side of us. Carl Jung always said shadow hooks shadow, you know, that shadowy behavior. Right, we don't deal with that, you know, in some refined way. It brings up that, you know, I just want to kill the SOB because he touched my child. Of course,
sure.
It's very primitive.
Absolutely,
it brings up because it's a primitive act, and it brings about a primitive response. But you're right. The only thing that works is because I personally don't think that most perpetrators can be helped and healed. I think that if there's healing because of wherever it comes from, and, you know, I do a chapter in my book about perpetrators, and it's a short chapter about perpetrators because I don't want to focus on that, but it talks about different types or different origins or whatever. But in most cases, if you have a situational abuse, it doesn't make it any less powerful or less emotionally damaging. But I think in a case like that, most perpetrators, I think, certainly can benefit from a minimum of 2 hours of psychotherapy and group therapy and so on. I believe that's possible. It's so individual. But I think if you have somebody who is a perpetrator and who is a pedophile, all you're going to do is have repeated behavior. And the only thing we can do is either put them where they're not going to have access to children, and we have to teach our children what to do, how to set limits. We need to be protective. We need to be more vigilant. It's so hard for parents now, with parents having to work and work long hours and try to find child care, and it's very, very difficult. And I know it's very, very tempting for parents to be groomed in a sense by people, you know, some people who are, you know, wanting to ingratiate themselves into the family so they can have access to the children. And it's very tempting, too, for families when there's strife and they've got to put food on the table to have somebody say, hey, no problem, I'll watch your kids. We've got to really be vigilant. We've got to make surprise visits on our, on who's watching our kids. We've got to vet them. We have to be careful. I told you I have some really strong feelings when I see, like, on Nextdoor or some apps like that, where people are saying, I need to go back to work. My child is a year and a half. Is there anybody here who can watch them? And I go, what in the world are you doing? You're putting out, an ad. I'm desperate for somebody to come watch my child. Mm-hmm. We have to be vigilant. We have to know safety and protection has got to be number one.
Absolutely.
And I understand it's difficult, and I understand financially it's difficult, but we just need to be careful. And there's lots of good people out there and good mm-hmm. resources. So, we're not putting everybody in one basket. We just have to be careful. And I'm a big believer of nanny cams, and I'm a big believer in surprise visits, because it's just looking out and making sure our kids are okay.
Well, Sharon, I'm so glad. And then I'm going to get to someone else here. I can't think of her name right, Roberta.
Please.
Let me say something about that. I'm glad you brought that up. Now, my mind is going around it like, blah, 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 blah. It does that at times. It's doing that tonight. But I have so many papers in front of me, so much knowledge about this. Child abuse is so disgusting.
Mm.
But, I stay up late at night, too, anyway, just to do an awful lot of research. And then I have all this stuff, and it drives me nuts. But, but what you said is so true, because one thing that people don't take into consideration, okay, is the fact that, okay, someone wanted to help you, say maybe help with the dinner. I'll come over, I'll make dinner for them. I know you guys are busy, you both have to work, you brought that up, that's such a good thing, blah, blah, blah. And it would be if the guy's okay.
Yeah.
But so often, unfortunately, they're not. So then my mind, how my mind is, it races. I start thinking, watch out, here she comes. And, then I start thinking about the volunteers at school. Why do I think of school? Because, quite frankly, when I was kidnapped and raped, he was watching the schoolyard. You said something earlier about how, the mall. A lot of times they go to the malls because kids go to the malls. And if they're after the teenagers especially, they're going to go to the malls. And this time of the year with Christmas coming and everything, they're shopping earlier and so forth. And I always tell people, even if you're at work, then you have to have friends. I mean, most people have friends, right? So have them call. Say someone has a driver's license, have them call the minute they get to the mall. If they can't call you at work, have them call, all right?
Yeah.
For the teenagers that are a little bit older, 16, 17-year-olds, right? And then when you leave in the mall, also call them too. So you have a time frame, all right? And don't let your kids stay at the mall for 5 hours because they hang out, and chances are they are going to get into trouble of some sort. Let them go for a few hours, maybe two or three. And then also, too, with the volunteerism, a lot of times they're not good neighbors. Well, with the schools, which is what made me think of Staten Island, but with the schools, we have volunteers to help with the boys and the girls, the teams that come in. And in the summertime, what are they doing? They're doing baseball, they're doing football, they're doing all kinds of stuff, getting ready for the next season, so forth and so forth. They have volunteers that come in and help. Where's the background check on these people?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Ooh. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a little article there and sent it into the editor where I lived in Peaburg just to make them think. It was published in our paper. And, you have to be so careful because you had said be vigilant. Yes. Well, that's one way of being vigilant, okay?
Yes.
We as parents, we have to, keep in mind and never say it's not going to happen to my kid because that just shows ignorance on the parents' part,
That's right.
It just simply does. Let's go to Roberta. Now, she's heard a whole bunch already and see what she has to say.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Hello, Roberta.
Hello. How are you doing? Yeah, I'm just listening. I'm just listening to a lot of it. It's because I'm a survivor and I'm realizing I'm no longer a victim. It's all like everything you've been talking about. It's like a lot of them things have happened in my life, and I know that's happened in other people. You know, that in my family's life too. You know, and that I'm not in contact with them, but I do a lot of praying, and hopefully they'll get the help they need, you know. But I had to quit being angry and hurt so bad and learn to have love in my heart, and that's what I'm working on right now. But it's sad that there's so many things that go on behind closed doors, and I know, you know, it happened in my life, and you just weren't allowed to talk about it. And it's sad that it happens today, too, with a lot of children, you know.
Mm-hmm. Given your experience, Roberta, if you were going to give any kind of advice to parents, like we're talking about how parents could help their kids or to kids, what would you want them to know that you think could be helpful?
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems impossible to be able to parent children these days, you know. It's just because of the way society is and everything. But I think, first of all, you need someone that you can trust. The parents need someone mm-hmm. they can trust that they can talk to and kind of get some guidance from. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like I say, no parent comes with instructions, you know, and each child is different, too. But it depends. It depends on if the child's been violated already, or if the child's in a good home and they're raising them, you know. But it would be hard either way, you know, because I know for me, you know, I mean, I would wish and wish and wish and wish I would have been protected, you know, mm-hmm. and I would have been safe, you know, but it didn't happen that way, but they talk about normal families. Well, you know, I heard there's no perfect family, but I think that they say the family that prays together stays together. But the parents need some kind of support themselves, and whether your family's, you know, functional or dysfunctional, you know. But me personally, I've been trying to get away from the people that perpetrated me for years that were even in my family. And I never don't have no parents to go to ask for advice. And I can't think of parents, what to tell parents. I would say to have open communication with your children, and there's no secrets, you know, and that they don't be afraid to talk because I know whenever I was talking, sometimes people would overreact and they'd go to extremes, and sometimes, you know, that's not always the best thing to do, you know. But I would say, you know, just have honest communications and love. I mean, you need love in the family, you know, and open communications and the support, you know. That's the best thing I can say.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And I think that one thing that you brought up too, which is so important in communication, it's not only what you say to a child, but it's how to listen, to be able to listen, where a child feels comfortable and trusting in terms of being able to share what's going on. I was just going to say, you also mentioned that important word is about being protected. Like you said, I wish that there would have been somebody to protect me. And I think probably I would say 99.9% of everybody I've ever seen in therapy, and then as well as I've known personally and myself included, I think the one thing that we've always wanted is, where was that one adult that could protect us or know what was going on and do something to intervene to be able to be there for us, right? Because that's the big variable. Because we could not take care of ourselves.
Yeah. The older people were abusing me too, not just the middle-aged people, but the older people, some of them were abusing me too. So, you know, it's just, but I would like to, let's see, what was I going to say? Well, I was going to say something I forgot. But, no, it's just, I was going to say something I forgot. I'll think of it later and tell you. Thank you for allowing me to share, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm. Well, it's so important. There's no greater expert in the world than somebody who's had the experience and who has been a victim and, as you said, moved from being a victim to being a survivor. Because that's what's important,
yeah.
Right? Is that
I still got a lot of wounds. I mean, I've had traumatic brain injuries too, and a lot of injuries and wounds, not just from the abuse, but from accidents too. And it might have been stemmed from the abuse. I don't know, but I'm gonna survive that too, you know. And I have faith in my maker, and I'm in the healing process, and I'm in therapy again now, and I know that you can't drop off all the baggage all at once. You just got, or the, not like to say the word baggage, but you can't drop off all. I mean, it's just like healing scars. You can't just, you know, they're just not going to be healed right at 1 second, you know. And that, they may not all ever be healed. But, you know, at least I know that I survived and that I'm out of danger, you know.
Mm.
But I still have fear, you know. I still have fear of the people around me working ill will against me. But, you know, at least I know I'm not living in their household, and I don't have to fear, you know, like I used to live in fear, you know. So.
Yes, yes. You know you're safe.
Right.
And you're right. I don't think any of us can go into therapy or whatever form of healing we're seeking.
I'm so glad you're still there. I don't know what happened.
What happened?
I don't know.
Did I get caught? I mean, did I get cut out or something? I don't know what happened. But mine started beeping my phone. I didn't know what was going on my computer. I didn't know what was happening. I thought I just didn't listen.
I think it was a blog talk thing, because I mean I was listening and all of a sudden my guys were gone. it's the end of episode. I go, what?
We were having a great conversation, Carol. I'm sorry you missed it. You'll have to tune in and replay.
I'll listen to it later on.
listen to it later on. But Roberta,
okay, good.
Important. She was just talking about doing heat moving from being a victim to a survivor. And saying that we don't drop all of our packed baggage at one time, that, you know, and you're absolutely right. And I wish when clients came into my office, or at certain work, wish in my own instance that I could have walked in and just said, okay, heal me. I'll give you 2 or 3 hours and let's get over this. It's never like that. You know, we start with one piece and then another piece. And then there's that piece that kind of creeps up that we forgot about. And then, you know, 3 months later, oh, there's that other piece. And then we think it's all done. And then, you know, a year later, oh, then there's that piece, you know, so. And I think that most of us have a commitment to say whenever something shows up in some way, we're going to go and address it. And that's where the courage is. You know, you were talking about still having fear. But when you go and you go back into therapy again to face whatever the next piece is, that's courage. That is incredible courage. Because unless you've, I think, been through any kind of abuse, it's hard to understand how deep that wound is and how much courage and strength it takes to go down in there and to, you know, clean it out and to bring it up to the light and work with it and to make ourselves stronger in the process. So I commend you, Roberta. I commend you. And I commend you for not being too idealistic, and also to working to replace a lot of the anger and pain with love in your heart, because that's what all of us are reaching for, you know, to have that kind of peace that comes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm. I am so thankful you two didn't hang up, because all of a sudden I had nothing. It was really weird. What? So I'm talking to you guys, and I say, don't hang up. But you guys had started a conversation, so that's great. Well, whatever you did, you did it right, Roberta. I don't know what it was. I have to listen later. Oh, my God. So Yeah. So you wanted to talk, too. You did want to talk about the holidays or something. We can do that. And but before we get into that, if it's all right with you, I just want to mention a little something about December, okay?
Please.
And the guys.
Please.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Okay. There's a group that's helpforguys.org, okay? And it had been Miss Luna's, she's Mrs. now, foundation, but it's no longer under her care. I think, so now I think Patricia A. McKnight might be handling that, I'm not sure. But anyway, if you look under helpforguys.org, there's a reason why I'm saying this. December is a month that we look at it. We look at all the men who have been abused as children. And if they don't get the help that they need, what happens to them? And how does it affect them all those years that they're growing up? You know, and there's just so many ways that it does affect them. But I'm not going to give away the program because this is an organization that I want to get on. But what I'm doing is wetting your whistle because I noticed in the year of 2020 when I went through the archives, there were so many guys that had come on the show, Sharon, and that's good because they're coming, you know, they're coming out now and they're speaking about, you know, how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how they feel,
yes,
you know, as being kids who were abused and how it affects them. And usually in a behavioral type of way, you know. But, you know, there's over $450 billion a year that is spent on child abuse. I don't know if people realize this.
Wow.
Now, I get my stats, yes.
Yeah.
I get my stats from the Justice Department and other things like that. And so I just wanted to, you know, let people know, you know, that there's a lot of help out there for you now. There, not as much as with women, okay, but there is help out there. You have the 1 in 6. I know you have that, but there's a lot more than that, too, and that guys should be looked at also. And, by the way, only 5% of all sexual assault reports filed have been proven false. Okay, we never knew exactly. That was a 2021 statistic, and you know, every once in a while you'll hear, well, you know, people tell lies, they do this, they do that. Not so. It's only just 5% out of the many that are made, and 82% of all the juvenile sexual assaults are female. Yes, 90% of adult rape victims are female. 41% of sexual against Native Indians are committed by a stranger. Adolescents age 14 to 17 were by most to be sexually abused and victimized. Nearly 1 in 6, I think that's probably where that came from, 1 in 6,
yes,
victimized in the past year. In the past year, okay? I have so much stuff here, so much information. But I don't want to give it all out. I don't want to do it. There's 30 of them. And I don't want to give them out, but I do want to tell you one thing here. Ooh, this really blew my mind. In Florida alone, a staggering total of 1,477,000 men have been victimized over the last decade.
Mm.
That's a lot of guys.
Mm.
Now, they're
That's
talking
a lot
about...
of guys.
Yeah, and those are children that grew into men, a lot of them. And nearly 40% of adult males that experience sexual violence from an intimate partner are left with psychological scarring.
Yes.
So you see,
yes,
guys have their problems too. So since, you know, December is coming up, I'm going to try and I know who I want to get on the show. But it is her thing now, and I want her to address these issues because I just read a few things, and I have so much in front of me, and I don't want to do that. So, but anyway, I don't want to step on people's toes. You know what I'm saying? Let them do their show. But anyway.
Right, but it's such an important topic, not only for all the boys who have been molested and have grown into men and have learned to keep their mouths shut, because there's other issues that surround male abuse too as children, right? Because men have this kind of macho thing. They don't want to admit to it. They don't want to they don't want to be seen, perceived as gay oftentimes, because it's oftentimes an adult male who is molesting a boy. And so they don't want to admit that because they feel that they're going to be shamed for that. They feel like they should have handled it better. They should have done something because men are taught to do, right? And so there's so many different variables that affect men and make them silent. And also men are abused as adult males too. We forget that. I mean, men are often the victims of domestic violence, and we forget that. And men are very vulnerable human beings and have been taught to, you know, not to talk, not to to appear weak, right, to have a lot of bravado around them. So I'm so glad you're going to be honoring males in the month of December and listening to some of their stories and some of the, and getting some of the numbers, because it is staggering. And I have to say that some of the males, I've seen quite a few males in my practice too, men who have been abused, and it's always amazing to me because I would guess I think only in two cases that I can think of have I had men come to me because they were abused as children, and that was a presenting issue. They came to me because of an issue at work, a marital issue, all kinds of other things, and it was only after we had built a trusting relationship that they shared with me something had happened. And it's always like, oh, I don't know if this has had any, makes any difference in terms of my relationship with my wife. However, this happened to me when, right? You know, as if that wouldn't have had a recall. And this has happened so many times. Men have come in oftentimes with for marriage counseling with their wives. And then maybe a year into it or maybe some time after, I'll get a phone call from the man and he'll say, I don't know what's happening, but I can't get out of bed and I am so depressed. And he comes in and finally, maybe on the second or third session of his being, you know, a mess in terms of being shattered, feelings coming up, overwhelmed with the feelings, as he said, I've never told anybody this, but this happened to me. And the pain, you could almost hear, you could almost with every word that comes out, it's almost like it's a sharp piece of glass hurting them with each word that comes up. It's so painful because they have not had the permission, I'm putting that with air quotes, to share what happened to them and not have it be something that is disgraceful or shameful for them. So I am
so glad
that you're doing this and honoring them for the month of, I mean, they should be honored 12 months a year, but I mean for the month of December, that's Men's Awareness Meeting.
Yeah,
month,
because
rather.
you know they're taught that they have to be tough and rough and macho.
Yes.
And you know, it's just they have feelings too, for God's sake. And if they're not addressed, many times they turn into real SOBs, all right? And if they get married, they hit their wife or they hit their children or they're afraid that they're going to be hit and so forth and so on. And then you come to realize that, you know, this person was abused. And somewhere down the grapevine you hear it or find the person discloses and says, well, all right, this is what happened. And I can say that with my first husband, when he was 11 years old, that's probably why he went and punched that guy in the nose so hard with my son, okay?
Mm.
And he was sexually abused. He probably wouldn't. He's probably rolling over in his grave right now. You got a big mouth, but you know. But you know, the point is, it affected his behavior. It did.
Well, how can it not? How can it not? And
yeah.
You know, abuse oftentimes is a learned behavior. So it's actually a small percentage of people that go on to sexually abuse, but there is a percentage. But one of the things is if you can imagine when you're young. And you watch a parent or whatever being physically abusive with you or whatever, and you look at that and you go like, okay, so the way the life is set up, one person is to hit her and the other person is to hit he, right? I mean, somebody hits and somebody is getting hit. Which one do I want to be when I grow up, right? So anybody with clear mind would say, I don't want to be the hitty anymore, right? So I guess a choice for me is that, which is why, you know, spanking or physical abuse can be very difficult in a child in terms of their whole learning patterns. So I think we need to be very aware of what we're also modeling for our children and for our boys. You know, what are we teaching them about being a man? What are we teaching them about being, you know, strong? What are we about teaching them respect for another human being, for respect for somebody else's body, for limits and boundaries, you know, because all those issues come into play, too, in the way we raise our boys. You know, you have sons,
absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Look at the teenage kids, and girls fall into this. Say a boy, he sees too much domestic violence at home. Or maybe he, too, is being abused at home, other ways, sexually, okay? Well, then he, you know, he's a teenager, he wants to have a girlfriend. How does he treat his girlfriend? And unfortunately, it's like we're magnets. I read an article on this. I'm always reading and stuff. And I read an article on this where we so often choose people who have been abused. I mean, we just simply do that. We feel comfortable with them, I think. You know, I know mm-hmm. I do, you know.
Well, we,
and,
you know, we find
so
somebody.
And so then what happens? That person so often then abuses the girlfriend. And it's like if she ends up marrying him, God forbid, all right, then the abuse continues on throughout the marriage many times. See, people need to get help. They need to get help.
Yeah.
And, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we oftentimes marry our unfinished business. So whatever is unfinished for us, whatever we have to learn, we're often attracted to that, right? And we marry that. Or we do the opposite. It's usually, you know, we marry an unfinished business, or we come up with a scenario in our mind like, I am never going to marry, do that. I'm going to marry da-da-da or something, right, to get away from that. And then, of course, it haunts us so because we still have to do our work. But we oftentimes will marry our unfinished behavior. If any of us have had marriages that didn't work, and we can look at that and say, what is it that I really learned from that? What was I looking for in that relationship? What did I need to do that I had not been doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The answer often is in our own childhood, which is what you're talking about what we get attracted to. You know, somebody to recreate a scenario, right, or give us the same feelings we had. It may not be exactly the same behaviors, but it brings about the same feelings within us, you know, feelings of being, you know, perhaps helpless or, you know, whatever we experience that we need to heal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah,
absolutely.
That role modeling is so important. It's so important for our boys. You know, I was so extreme with my son about, you know, about caring about a girl's emotions with him. He used to say, mm-hmm. Oh, are we going to have that emotional talk again about, you know, you've got to be responsible. Because not only, you know, if you're going to be physical with a girl, you have to understand that a girl is different than a boy. That oftentimes they get emotionally involved and they open up their hearts. So if you're going to, you know, if you're going to do that, just know that you have a responsibility. And he used to just roll his eyes and he teased me forever about that. Oh, we're going to talk about it. Yes, because that was so important to me. Bless my kids' mm-hmm. hearts. Amazing they ever survived having a mother going through graduate school when they were little. You know, it was just, I had to practice on them. But I kept thinking, I just really wanted to raise a boy that understands that it's not the same possibly as for a girl than it is for a boy, and then he has to be cognizant of a girl has mm-hmm. feelings. You know, she gets attached, she opens her heart, and you know, just be careful where you tread.
Right? We have to learn to teach them to respect, you know, women and girls. Absolutely. Because so often in families where there's so much violence, right, as I was growing up and then I married into it, I didn't learn, okay? I guess I was looking for that thing that was missing that you were talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And so the first one offered me excitation, you know, I love the bikes, I still do, you know, and you know, the things that we used to do, the parties we went to, the places we went to, the things that we did, and, you know, it was just, I loved it, and then with the second husband, he was into, you know, martial arts, and that really blew my mind. I wanted to learn those martial arts, but he took them out on me. Okay, well, here, I'll show you a new one. Okay.
Yeah.
So You know, so we have to be careful how we choose. We just simply do. And it's what we learn. I think I heard you say earlier, right? What we learn is many times often what we do. And we have to get ourselves out of that cycle, you know, so that we don't make the same mistake and become mommy and daddy.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because, you know, having sons and daughters, like we're going to go and tell them the best way to find a relationship, right? Because, you know, we have, you know, both of us, it sounds like I've been married twice. I've been married to the love of my life, and we've been married almost 40 years. So it's very good and very solid, and I have a wonderful husband. I'm very lucky. And my first one was too. I mean, I went for where you went for excitement with, you know, bikes and parties and all that. My first husband, I went for normal. My parents were very colorful people, very theatrical and very, you know, just very colorful and very looked up to by a lot of people and so on. And so what I wanted more than anything was something normal and safe. And my first husband, one of our first dates, invited me to Sunday dinner at his house, and his mother was wearing heels and an apron and frosting a cake, and there was a roast beef in the oven, and the father wore a cardigan sweater. They had a cocker spaniel, and I went, this is for me. It was so normal and so quiet.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like the Brady Bunch, right?
It was so Brady Bunch, and I just loved that. As a matter of fact, after we were divorced, I kept his family. I really did love his parents, and I can stay very close to them. But it was just because it felt so safe and predictable. And, you know, looking back on it, I'd say, yeah, I mean, I craved predictability. I prayed kind of boring and routine and rituals and traditions. I craved that because you always knew what was going to happen. You knew what to expect, and they were just very safe people, and I loved that.
Exactly.
And I think it was healing for me. I think it was okay. You know, it was a good place to raise my kids and so on. It was. I just needed that healing. I needed that peace. I needed that time out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had kind of
I know what
each
you mean
other.
By
I think
that.
We got married. Yeah, do you? Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. Because, you see, it was crazy, though. I have to tell you, Sharon, I mean, I knew what I had at home, and that was far from normal, and I wasn't stupid. I knew it wasn't normal. And so with my first husband, when I would go over to his house, right, when I go over to his house, everything was like I said, the Brady Bunch. You know, his older sister was there. She's playing Ring Around the Rosie with her children, a little tiny children. Mother was cooking dinner. Father was reading the newspaper. I mean, how Brady Bunch can you get? You know what I'm saying? And the house is just, you know, quiet and just serene and safe, like you said, safe. And I'm a big person for looking for safety because I never feel safe, okay?
Yeah.
So, No. So in his house, it was all facade.
Mm.
It was a facade.
Mm.
I didn't know that, and I wasn't smart enough to know it at that time. And they put on such a good act. You were talking about your parents were actors. Well, these guys, they were actors, all right. And, you know, anyone would think that they belonged in some kind of magazine. We used to have magazines in those days, you know, like a Life or whatever, you know, and the typical American family, right? And it wasn't like that at all. So when I wasn't there, the mother and father were fighting. My husband-to-be would just plain leave home because he'd be disgusted, and he'd get drunk. But I was drinking, too, so we were both drunk. It didn't bother me any. I'm the same way drunk as I am sober. I just have a good time, okay? And whereas my husband, when he was drunk, was a maniac. His face would change. He'd get that maniacal look on his face, and you didn't know what the heck he was going to do. This is when I'd married him already. He'd gone to the service. He got drafted. That shows you how long ago, the Vietnam War. He didn't go in the Vietnam War. A lot of my friends did. he went to Korea instead. Don't know why, but I was happy at that time that he didn't go into Vietnam War, all
right?
And so he didn't have any PTSD or anything when he came out. So I couldn't understand his behavior. It was like tonight to day. So when he came home, he was totally different. The real person came out, and I was so shocked. Okay.
False
and my poor children, my poor children, they suffer so because my son so wanted a father. What boy doesn't want a father? What girl doesn't want a father? Mm. And they didn't get it from their real daddy, and he was just so negligent. He could care less. I didn't know he was gambling on the side, or probably wouldn't have married him. And, so lights were turned off, phone was taken out of the wall, all kinds of stuff, things. So this is not what I expected from him. So it was like definite, one way, and black and white. There you go, black and white. It was so just the way it was. It was awful. And and I stayed home waiting for that nut. I didn't cheat on him.
Mm.
Yeah,
you still had hope.
And that's what I got.
Right? I mean, you had hope. Yeah, you thought this was going to be salvation for you—that peace and quiet and safety.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought it was going to be wonderful, and it turned out to be so disappointing. So, were there red flags? I don't know. I often you say you look back. What could I have done? All right, like at your marriages, and quite frankly, I can look back too. But I was just so groomed or something, so naive also. I got married when I was 19. I wasn't very old when I got married. So I didn't have the experience. I didn't have the fortitude. I had nothing to look forward to in the relationship to judge it because he was always putting on an act.
Exactly. Exactly.
He belonged in Broadway, for God's sake. He would have done well. Really? Oh, my God. And could he sing?
Exactly.
He and I used to sing together. Oh, my God. So, it's just that sometimes, if the red flags are there, they're really, really hidden.
Mm.
And that's the way it was with him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You bet.
Yeah. And
we need to learn them.
Well, yeah, we do. That's absolutely true. And we need to learn about, what happens when you have unhealed wounds too, right? Because you make a lot of decisions out of that. But you don't know that at the time. And certainly, at 19 and we're young and we all married young then, what did we know? We saw what we saw and we bought that package, and then you get home and over time you unwrap it and you go like, oh my God, I had no idea that this was, what was inside that package. And and that's the safety, But
it was explosives. That's what it was, explosives. And I didn't know any better.
The other thing is we don't know anything about marriage until you're married. You don't know what that even means and what you really need in a situation like that, right? I mean, it's so ludicrous.
I never saw a marriage that was good. My mother with my stepfather, when she remarried, they got along famously. So after marriage number two even, I saw what a good marriage was, but it was too late. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw how they behaved with each other, but they couldn't have cared less about their children at all.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So,
it was about
but
them.
I saw their behavior. Oh my goodness, and then I wanted that, and no, I never found it. I'm still looking though. By God, I got a lot of kick left in me.
Are you open to that?
My son and I were going back and forth before, and no, I don't ever want to get married again, ever. I had enough of that. Okay, I do want to go out a few times a week, okay? I don't want to be joined at the hip. I do have my life. I do well on my own, okay? My children do help me with the lawn and stuff like that because, you know, if you're, mommy needs help, I feel, well, okay.
Yes.
I flip them a 20 or whatever, you know. And for being such good kids, I'm very fortunate. They grew up well. But you know, it's what we go through as survivors. We look back now. And I've made the decision. I mean, sure, I've gotten asked out quite a few times in this new neighborhood, if you want. I want to call that. It's 3 years now. I moved in on Halloween. Yes, I did. 3 years ago. Is that so fitting for me? I don't know.
It's so symbolic, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. And while I'm moving in, I'm throwing candy. Here, take this. Here, take that. Oh, my God, I had so much fun. I really did. And But anyway, so they got to like me really fast. The kids, oh, this is a candy lady. I was going to Reese's peanut butter cups, not the cheap stuff. You know, they were having a blast, you know. So, but anyway, the point is that the people around here, I'm more of a city person. You know that. And the people around here are very, very laid back and country. And they're... In the wintertime, they go inside, and they don't come out. I swear to God. If a car goes down the street, I go, what was that? Oh, it's a car. And, you know, people have been in my house, and they say, my God, it's like a vacuum. Go outside and do something. Go sing a song. Go do something, because it's so, so quiet. It's too quiet. I feel like I'm in the twilight zone. You know what I'm saying? I really
it's
do.
Not,
I feel like I'm somewhere.
It's not a match for you?
No. Look, I hate to say this. A couple of them were married, and I had to say no. Go away. Okay? Nice guys.
Mm-hmm.
One had a bike. It really made me mad. But I like his wife, too. She's a nice person. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Because she's really a nice person. And she thought they had a good marriage. So I certainly wouldn't, you know, infringe upon that. Some people live together, okay, and they do it for financial reasons, but they're separate. That's a different situation. You know, they're not together in any sort of shape, way, or form, okay, without being graphic. But they don't, maybe he doesn't make enough money to be on his own and she doesn't make enough, or maybe they're just comfortable in their house. I know people like that. And, but that's not the case around here, and I'm not going to get involved with that. And they make too much moonshine, okay?
You do live on the country.
Oh, God, yes. But look, there's bears and coyotes out here. I don't dare let my cat out. Because she'd be a tasty morsel. You know what I'm saying? It would be terrible.
Yes.
Yeah. It's that my backyard is a nice backyard. I have a huge front yard. I have a close to an acre. And in the woods, though, is state property. So you could be sure there's a lot of bears. I think they're sleeping now, aren't they, hibernating?
I think so. I don't know. I'm living in kind of a city, so I don't know about bears. We have and raccoons and, you know, that's about it.
Well, I do know they hibernate, but I don't know what the date is they do that. Okay.
I don't know. They probably
I don't know either. Yeah. But, you know, it's different. I went, like, from city where there was, you know, people chasing each other with guns and knives and all this other stuff and chanting all kinds of things because my neighborhood went down. Okay, it went down. So then I ended up over here, and it's too much of a change for me. It really is. So I think to myself, I keep thinking about selling my house. Quite frankly, Sharon, if people are going to sell their house out there, if you're listening, hey, now is the time to do it. Because people are moving out of the city, you know, like New York and all this other stuff. You know, they don't want to be in there because there's too much trouble. And so all of a sudden, but they're going to feel the same way I do. I'm sorry.
And you're a woman looking for trouble, so you're ready to move back into the city?
Well, I like urban areas. Everything is right at your fingertips. I love to, you know, I have a bodega right down the street. You know, I can go in there, get my milk, my bread, whatever, you know, if you're living in a city. Here you have to travel to go to where you want, and it's just too isolated.
Mm.
You know, to me it's isolation, mm-hmm. and that can be even depressing with me at times because it's too quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you're very extroverted, so what energizes you would be being around people and some kind of, you know, feeding off of other people's energy as well as obviously participating in that too. So for extroverts to live in an isolated, more isolated environment, it's really hard. I mean, it takes its toll just on that level of, like I said, on your energy level and so on, and inspiration and energy and all of that. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. But that's hard to then make another change,
hard.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's another change. And you know what you have and you don't know what you're moving into. You know what I'm saying? It's very difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
And even women out there who are with their husbands yet, you know, they know, how do they put this, a saying for that? They know the devil that they have, but they don't know the devil they're going to get, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, you know, it's not a good thing to stay, though. They have to learn that. It's not a good thing to stay. And
well,
today
we do have,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and there's something about being at different times of your life where you really want to need to be, right? Because it's even whether if you're changing relationship, you're changing a house, you know, you're changing work or something, it means something different in different times of your life, you know. Like at this time of my life, I would probably not go live in something that was isolated because I would want to be around the convenience of knowing people. I would want to know, you know, just a little bit of ease in getting around. We're not having to, like one house we lived up in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which is, you know, near the ocean, but you could drive way up in the Redwoods. It was absolutely beautiful. And we lived up there for about 3 or 4 years when I was growing up. My mother didn't drive, which really hard.
Geez.
I walked about a mile and a half to school. It sounds like one of those stories. I had to walk through the snow and sleet. We didn't have any snow or sleet in Santa Cruz. It was really nice. But it was like having to walk every place. And my mother was totally dependent then on my dad because she didn't drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, to go to pick up milk, you had to, you know, it was a 20-minute drive. So,
yes,
but
that's
for
what
her
I'm talking
at that
about.
Time, pardon?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, I can go and cross a highway. That's not too far away from me. Don't get me wrong. But I don't like this particular store. And it's well-known, so I'm not going to say it. All right. To me, it's not my type of shopping. So I ended up going into Hackettstown, which is, you know, maybe 25 minutes away from me to go shopping, and then you got to lug it all in and all this other stuff. You know what I'm saying? So my daughter, she says to me, Mom, you're my mother. I love you. Why don't you get the service that they deliver? I don't like that either. You see, I'm not an old person yet in my head.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not there.
Yeah.
And then also, too, when you do that, and I'm not knocking those services because some people really need them, okay? But I like to pick the meat out myself. I like to pick, you know what I'm saying? Because
I like
otherwise
to pick my own lettuce and my own vegetables and my own meat.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't
Absolutely.
Like it either.
No. It's good for people who are, you know, maybe they're disabled or something or whatever, and then they have that service, they offer it to them, they have that. That's good.
Yes.
But anyway, the point
It was good during the pandemic and so on, too, when there were some restrictions for a lot of people, you know, who did have some disabilities and so on and were concerned about going out. So, you know, it was very helpful. But
well,
I like
that
to do it myself.
Could be coming back again. Because now they're urging people to go and get boosters. And I had my shots. I had my vaccines. And I don't feel like I need to go and get a booster next. I really don't. This world is so crazy. And then they wonder why people are, you know, terribly depressed. I get these phone calls. They're crying in my ear. It's very sad. And, you know, what I can't do much for them. They have to do for themselves. And I tell them always, you know, listen, I'll sit and talk to you, and I'll tell you what I know. And I said, and then go get a therapist, okay? I can't see you. I can't touch you. You know, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you need someone you can go to.
Yeah.
And I send them to the programs. By the way, we do have programs on our NASCA website, okay, NASCA.org, and all the way over to the left-hand side, you'll see programs. Open them up. Go to your state. I don't know what state you're from. Go to your state. If you're from New York City, you're in business, because there's so many programs where people want to mingle with other people. And that's a good thing, though, Sharon, because I've seen people who are totally isolated and wanted to be because they had all kinds of problems mentally. And then I'd push them into a program where there was a lot of people, and, oh, my goodness, they would blossom, and they would actually say, thank you so much for getting me involved with, you know, these programs and other people, because that was like a step in the right direction for them. So what's good for some is good for others, and what isn't, isn't. But I always say to people out there, for God's sake, don't sit home, isolate yourself during this time. Yes, wear a mask if that's what you have to do. I have my own opinions on that. But the point is that, you know, don't isolate, because that's why you're so depressed. And that's why you're calling me up at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning and you're crying in my ear. You know, you have to get out. And you should get a hold of Sharon's workshop books. That's another thing you can do, too. And it's called Healing Steps, A Gentle Path to Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And it's written in a workbook format with exercises. And that's good, because you can hold it in your hand. You can look at it. You can read it. And you can go over it and over it. And that's on Amazon, right?
It is on Amazon. It has delightful graphics in it, by the way. It has one, I really spent a lot of time on the graphics. But, yes, and it does. I think one of the things that's really helpful about the book is it will talk to you and kind of prepare you to say, before you start on a healing journey or as you continue on your healing journey, these are the things that are important to do in terms of taking care of yourself. And it also tells you about seeking help. It tells you about how to interview a therapist. It talks to you about what to expect. It talks to you about, and you can fire a therapist too, because she does work for you. And then it goes through the different steps to take you, hopefully, from being, as Roberta was talking about, from being a victim to being a survivor. And it can be opened up, and you can open it up at random, which I've had people tell me they do, to say, I don't know what's going on with me, but I'm just going to open it up and see, oh, look at this. It's about family relationships. I'm gonna do this section on that. Or you can go ahead and do it in order. So, but it's a companion. And you know, you're so right about being isolated during this pandemic. It's so important. Even if you get out and you go for a walk, and or, you know, you go to a grocery store and see other people, it's so important not to isolate. And use whatever protection you feel is right for you. Do that, whether, you know, getting vaccines, wearing a mask, whatever it is that you feel is right for you, do that, and don't isolate, because when you isolate, the wounds will fester. So bring them to the light, you know, open yourself up.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean you have to go with a large group or whatever, but, you know, we're social animals, and we, you know, we're more comfortable, we feel safer when we know we're part of a tribe, whatever that tribe is, and it may be the NASCA tribe. Right, to say there's a place where I belong, because there are other survivors who are there who've had experiences similar to mine, may not be exactly like mine, but similar to mine, and they get it, and they understand what it's like during this difficult time, or what it's like during the holidays, which we kind of referred to coming up, because that's when a lot of the triggers come up, the memories, the feelings of isolation, feelings of depression. feelings of expectations not met, you know, feelings of disappointment, feelings of loneliness, all of that start to come up. So it's so important to connect. I'm so glad you brought up about the website and what people can find there. And you're an expert on that.
Well, thank you so much. I think you're an expert, too.
Mm.
I know you are. But anyway, you know, yeah, the show is almost over. But we're here 365 days a year. So no one has to feel like they're alone. So, you know, on Thanksgiving, people are going to be, the show's going to be going on, and people will be coming and going, dropping in and out, whatever. But you're not alone. We're here. And you can talk, you know, to people. We're going to have a subject. I don't know what it is yet. But and then also, too, Christmas, same thing. Now, I have family, so I'm in and out, but I will be calling in and out, okay? And but on New Year's Eve, I will stay home because it's a better thing if I stay home, okay, on New Year's Eve. But,
stay off the streets,
you
know. Carol.
Yes. Anyway, people are real happy when I stay off the streets. You know? But anyway, so it's a good thing. So, you know, call in. You're never alone. And again, we have, you know, the contact list. That's another thing I should mention. Okay, I'm the night owl. I get all the a.m. hours. Well, not always, but most of the time all the a.m. hours. People who call me. And don't feel funny about it because I'm used to working the graveyard shift. I just simply am in a lot of places that I worked. So, you know, I'm here, so you can talk to me. And the other people are available also. So you never have to isolate. There's always someone to talk to. And I just want you to know that. So we had a really good show. I don't know what happened before. I don't even want to think about it because I don't want it to happen again.
I don't know what that –
Did you hear me at all?
No.
Were you able to hear my voice? No?
No.
That
I didn't hear anything.
So weird.
All of a sudden, it started to flash on my screen, and your name started to flash on my screen, and I thought, why is it doing that? And I didn't know what I was supposed to do with it. So I just kept on. Roberta was talking, and I was sharing with her, and we were enjoying our time together. And then all of a sudden,
That's
it came
good.
Back. And you disappeared, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened.
Well,
I called Bill
on my cell phone. I said, he said, you're not there as the host anymore. Call in. I said, well, where did I go? I don't know. So I called in, and then they put me back on. So I really don't understand what happened. But I'm glad that during that lapse of time that you two are together talking. Otherwise, you would have been talking to yourself, all right? I don't know. And you couldn't even hear me.
It won't be the first time, Carol. It won't be the first
time. Oh, okay.
Time
well,
we
all kind of, like, do that at times, I think. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that I'm always so happy when you're on, you know. We get along so well. And you always have so much good advice. So thank you so much for coming on the show. We have a few minutes left. My clock, I think, is a little... I have 9:26. What do you have when you're in?
I have 6:24.
6, 7, 8, 9. All right,
9:24.
We're
3 hours apart,
right?
You're in New Jersey,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm only 2 minutes fast. Okay, yeah, I know that. So you're only 2 minutes in. Oh, okay, 2 minutes, that's not bad. So anyway, Roberta, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm really happy and I'm happy that you and Sharon had that, you know, chance to talk. That's really good. And she's great. And you guys out there, you know, again in December, come on, you know, you come on back on the show because, quite frankly, there were quite a few of you that did show. And it's a good thing, you know, for you to be heard as well. They need to hear your voices as well. So don't feel funny about it. I'm probably going to contact you anyway. So I'm just letting you know ahead of time. I'm going to be contacting you. Watch out. Here she comes. You know. And, you know, so anyway, so is there something you'd like to leave the people with tonight?
Well, you know, Karen, because the holidays are coming, I really hope that people, and I'm speaking about people who have been abused, really prepare themselves, you know, prepare something for yourself, be prepared to deal with whatever's coming up. Make, oh my God, my phone is ringing. Make,
I know, I hear it. Yeah. You. Go ahead.
Let me turn that off. To be prepared, to do something special, as I said, to be prepared for anything that may come up, be able to set boundaries for yourself. It's a time when, like I said, trigger memories come up. There's a time when sometimes family gatherings come up that bring up things that are unpleasant. And I will leave you with one of my favorite quotes about being thankful, which is, and I wish I could remember where I learned it, but it's, I may not be where I want to be, but I'm thankful for not being where I used to be.
Oh, I like that.
I
like that.
I may not be where I want to be, but I'm thankful for not being where I used to be. And I feel that way. And I'm very thankful for being able to be here tonight with you. And thank you, Roberta, and thank you, Carol. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure is right. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm always so happy. You know, we do have some new hosts now. I wrote you. I told you.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So everyone has to have their turn with you, and I'm jealous because I want you all to myself. But anyway,
that sounds very weird, Carol.
Well, now you know what I'm saying.
I do. Of course,
yeah,
I do.
I know. But so I don't know what next month is going to bring. You know, who you're going to be with. So, but anyway, they have to learn too. You know, how to host and everything, and so everyone has to have a turn. So we had a wonderful show. It was just the three of us, and that's all you need. You know, and we've covered so many topics, so many different areas, and again, people, you do not isolate. Yes, the holidays are coming, and just remember, you can call NASCA, and you can call me in the AM like you do. That's fine. I don't care. And, you know, so our show is really, really about over.
You know,
and go ahead.
I just want to say one thing, which is, you know, not all conversations and interactions have to be heavy. They can be like tonight. We talked on some very important things, but we also had a good time, right? We also touched on personal experiences, and it's all about connecting and, you know, being there for one another. That's what it's all about.
That's right. But, you know, when you and I are on together, we always have a good time. You know,
we do.
We make each other laugh. Yes, we do. And but we do cover a lot of good things. And so it was a very, very good show. So I'm waiting for the 90-second cue to happen. And I don't know if it's going to come through my machine or not. So anyway, Roberta, are you still there?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much,
all.
I really enjoyed the show, too. Thank you.
Okay, sweetie. I'm glad you called in. See, my computer's not working quite right. So I think I'm going to have to end the show manually because I have maybe 1 minute left. Mine says 9:31 now. Okay, I have 1 minute.
So this is your local therapist signing off and wishing everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, and you too. Have a great time, okay?
Thank you.
And love you to death. Absolutely. And you too, Roberta. Okay, honey. Good night now. Good night to everybody.
Good
night now.
Good night, Roberta.
Weird. Okay.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was